And tonight, a very special episode of Lost in the Static.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Josh, touch me in my no-no place.
You weren't saying no-no at the time.
I know, I liked it. I always like it.
You told me you loved it and you wanted more.
That's right.
That's a joke, by the way. I know that'll be taken out of context, but that's a joke. But hey, at least I'm the butch in that one.
And the fanfic rolls on.
Well, if you couldn't tell from Scott's little teaser opening before the credits, tonight we're going to talk about those very special episodes of kids' shows and cartoons.
Yeah, you know, you don't see them much anymore, no, unfortunately.
I think every time they do try and tackle something relatively serious in a modern sitcom, they don't draw attention to it the way they used to. Because you remember, they used to promo the shit out of, you know, Tonight on Different Strokes.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very special episode.
Oh, yeah. I remember, you know, it was, I think I've talked about this in our episodes concerning the 90s or the 80s and somewhat. And these were really events that people found.
Right. But they also struck you as really strange in the fact that you'd have a show like Different Strokes, which is just a sitcom about the wacky adventures, and the most serious they'd ever get would be occasionally referencing slight racism, and that's about it. That's
right.
The raciest, no pun intended, that they ever got. Then all of a sudden you've got the episode where Mr. Carlson from WKRP is a child molester, and he's trying to get in their little 10-year-old pants, and you go, that was strange tonal shift.
Yeah, that was kind of out of nowhere.
Yeah,
we're doing this, and of course there was the episode of Different Strokes that everybody knows about. What was it, the guy at the bicycle shop?
That's the one I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That was Mr. Carlson from WKRP.
Okay.
That was Gordon Jump, and he was the child molester. And you go, this isn't like the rest of the series or all the episodes that will follow it.
I know, it's really out of nowhere. Or there was the very special episode where it was the very special episode of Facts of Life where Joe figured out that she was actually a man.
No, that one never happened.
It should have.
It should have, but it didn't.
Okay.
And you know, and then you had the Punky Brewster episode about the kid being caught in the old refrigerator that they found at the junkyard and almost dying.
Yeah, I do remember that one.
Yeah, that was another very special episode. And you saw this kind of thing all the time. And it's sometimes it got borderline and inappropriate, considering what the show normally was. That, you know, the audience that's going to be watching Mr. Belvedere, it's inappropriate to pitch them the high school student that the grade school student with AIDS. That it doesn't fit at all.
Yeah, it was just these odd, strange little tonal shifts out of nowhere.
And
like I said, you don't see that too much anymore. We still deal with this stuff. I mean, you have shows, anything from South Park that deals with some pretty heavy political stuff.
But they don't really deal with it in a heavy political way.
Yeah, they don't deal with it in a heavy political way. And of course, you have shows. It seems to have made the switch to the adult side, because you've got shows like CSI and some others dealing with some pretty heavy
issues. Are made for adults.
Right. And you don't really see it in the kids programming anymore. I mean, I can't think of that very special episode of Animaniacs.
Right. And oh my God.
Go on.
Why do you put the cat box in the studio? Jesus.
I'd say
that's inhuman, but she's not human.
I put it next to the chair just for you.
Thank you. All right, so that little distraction out of the way. But then when you had these very special episodes, and I don't know if they all did this, because I haven't seen like the Different Strokes episodes since I was a kid or anything like that, but the Mr. Belvedere one about the kid with the AIDS student also included in the B plot one of the funniest racist jokes I've ever heard.
Yeah, you
on
mentioned
mainstream TV.
You mentioned this to me outside when we were talking about the topic, and I was like, "Well, what is it?" And you're like, "I'm not telling you until the show." So, tell me.
In the B plot, the youngest son, he's maybe 7, 8 years old. He's going to be playing Lincoln in the school play. So he's walking around the school all the time to get into character. He's wearing the costume and the beard and everything. He goes up to the black student, the one black student at lunch, and goes, "Give me your brownie and I'll free you."
Wow.
That's actually funny, though, isn't it? Scott's trying to compose himself.
I'd like to see that on the NAACP and such reacts, because
that's
wow.
That's legitimately funny, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that really was pretty good.
Give me your brownie and I'll free you. And I'm like, and that's just the B plot. That's got nothing to do with the A plot of the kid with AIDS. Maybe they thought we're already tackling serious issues. No one will notice the racist joke we slipped in.
I still love, and I know you're not a fan of Family Guy.
All right.
But again, flashback to something. Lincoln walks out of his log cabin, looks over at his neighbor and goes, "Hey, lawn's getting a little shaggy for that." Or lawn's getting a little shaggy, a little out of shape. And the neighbor looks at Lincoln and goes, "Yeah, I used to have a guy for that."
That's bad.
That made me laugh. Anyway.
But then the other thing with very special episodes is they were, like you pointed out, events. They got great ratings.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, your show could be in a real slump.
I actually think that's one of the reasons they pulled those out a lot of times is you got all the media attention.
Sure.
If all of a sudden you made one of your characters a drug addict for an episode, all of a sudden you got the media attention, like the Saved by the Bell about getting addicted to diet pills.
I'm so excited.
Yes. Or the Family Ties, where I can't remember if he was still in high school or if he was in college at this point, but Michael J. Fox, his character was taking his girlfriend's speed because she was prescribed it because of her thyroid condition, and he was taking it to cram for the finals. And he got addicted to speed. And I remember that was all done in a very serious tone and not really fitting with the rest of Family Ties and the wacky family humor, does it?
There was an episode of Family Ties, and it's, I wish I could remember more, but it was, again, centered around Alex. And he was remembering his life. And this was really out of tone because they didn't use the house set. They didn't use.
Is that the one with like the black set with all the smoke and
shit?
Yeah,
black.
I remember that one. Yeah, okay. I remember that episode. I don't remember the details, but I remember like the set and the imagery.
Yeah, it was done in a black box, and you had very, very sparse set pieces. Like one was just a window frame, and I think there was just a couch there or something like that.
Welcome to the David Lynch directed episode.
Yeah, I know.
Not literally, but you kind of get where I'm going.
And I miss, even if it was, you know, not necessarily the very special social issue episode, but
I can't stand when they do that today.
I really wish they would bring in more guest directors and do the weird stuff every now and then.
Like NCIS did that for like one of the episodes right before the finale last year, where Gibbs is about to get shot during a robbery. He's just at a diner and the bullet slows down and all the ghosts of all the dead characters come back and help him remember the good things in his life and why, you know, because he was trying to decide whether he should just let the bullet take him out. And I'm going, oh, this is so trite. Why not just call this Emmy nomination, the episode? Because I'm like, this is awful.
If we ever do a show, a video show together, you and I, we should have one just called Emmy Nomination, the episode.
Well, it's like Brian Lewis put on Trailer Park a couple of weeks ago. Have you seen the trailer for The Master yet? That one that's about Scientology with Philip Seymour Hoffman and Joaquin Phoenix?
I've seen teaser trailers. I haven't seen the full trailer yet.
Brian Lewis was dead on. I guess the title Oscar Bait the Movie was already taken, huh?
Well, it's like, what was it? Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close was just.
But why not just call this Oscar nomination?
Oscar Bait the Movie, yes.
Because that's what those movies are made for. They're not made for a purpose. But that's the other thing with these episodes is, now, they're jokes today, okay?
Right.
you know, everyone makes fun of the Mr. Carlson episode that we brought up of about the bike shop.
Yes.
But it's not really played for laughs. It's not a joke. It's not even done in a really cheesy way.
Well, they weren't jokes at the time.
Right. That's the thing I don't get is how come when the internet latched onto these, they became jokes, yet they were actually trying to get to kids and teach them something or warn them. I mean, yes, it seems inappropriate that you have Winnie the Pooh. Brad reviewed this on a DVDR Hell. Remember Winnie the Pooh about people touching you in your naughty place?
Yes.
That's just kind of, why would you go to Winnie for that? But, that seems weird.
But again, these were, and I'll agree with you on this. These were things that were trying to teach kids a lesson dealing with things that, especially parents, and especially conservative parents back in the day might have trouble even talking about this stuff. And I remember, you know, incidents in my neighborhood and in my family even that were, you know, you do what you need to do to get over whatever the hell happened, and then you sweep it under the rug and it's not spoken of again.
Ah, the 50s style of parenting.
Yeah, and
walk it off, son. Walk it off.
Of course, daddy beat you. That's what daddies do. Now, buck up and move on, little camper. That kind of a mentality, which luckily we don't have anymore.
See, I had one of those dads that, like, if you fell and scraped your knee and you'd cry, he'd go, "Don't be a bitch." He'd smack you in that, and he'd go, "Now you got something to cry about."
Yeah,
I had one of them dads.
That's the kind of deal, but. I mean, these did have a serious purpose at the time, but like so many things, you know, so did so many of those like personal hygiene movies and VD movies of the 50s that that they used to show. Yeah, you giggle.
Reefer
now.
Madness.
Yeah, Reefer Madness. I mean, at the time they were going, marijuana is a serious threat for
bullshit.
Some
it's bullshit,
reason, but you know. And so at the time...
Opiates are still okay, apparently.
Apparently. But at the time, they had a very, very serious purpose, and they were taken seriously. The reason the internet has latched onto them and looks back is the same reason why you and I look back at those films from the 50s, you know, with Billy walking through the hallway and, oh, he's got to remember to wash his hands after he pees. You know, it's we look at those and we kind of giggle, but they were serious at the time. The very special episode of sitcoms and stuff... Very serious at the time, but to kids today that are pretty much, you know, they're hit with stranger danger in kindergarten and they get all of this stuff at school and it eventually just becomes a joke.
So are you saying the Law and Order SVU generation doesn't really find Mr. Carlson hitting on Gary Coleman anymore?
Dangerous or shocking in any way when you've got, you know... Like you said, Law and Order SVU, where they're like, "Well, Your Honor, the defendant obviously grabbed the little girl and
Stuck his finger in her hole and
vaginally violated her on 4 occasions, and here's how, and here's why, and blah blah blah."
Kind of desensitizes you
a little bit.
Well, okay, how about when they don't like a sitcom doesn't try to tackle that kind of serious topic, but still stays funny and tries to tackle a relatively serious social topic. I'm thinking of not from the original WKRP, but the new WKRP in Cincinnati in 90 and 91 tackled censorship when the whole cop killer thing was big.
Okay.
Where they were carrying a Rush Limbaugh style show. And so to counter it, Razor D played cop killer and had all the people trying to take Cop Killer off the air. And it brought up the serious censorship debate. Okay, we can't play this, but we can play Rush Limbaugh talking about how darkies shouldn't be able to drink at the same fountains as as whiteies.
Yeah.
And it brought up a very serious issue of censorship and where the line is drawn while all remaining a sitcom through and through. That, I think, works better because there was no tonal shift. It stayed a regular episode of WKRP, just with somewhat of a more serious topic, but still being done in a sitcom way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's, but again, these things, I don't, you know, yeah, they were done to try and deal with the social issues of the day, whatever those social issues were, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the difference is exactly what you and I mentioned, which was ratings. They were a lot of them were done purely to get ratings and to say, all right, we need some more, you know, small wonder is failing. We need some more eyes on the show. So have
nothing would help.
I know, but have whatever, what's his name, create an older version of a robot that is a sex bot. And we'll throw that into small wonder and boom, we've got all these eyes because we get the media coverage of, oh my God, they're going to have a sex bot on a kid's show.
Well, even when they do it on sitcoms that are not aimed at kids, like I remember the Golden Girls episode where they thought which one was the slut?
Blanche.
Where some old partner of hers had AIDS and they had to wait like the 2 weeks for the test to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were dealing with AIDS. And it's like, a show's not really for kids anyway, but that's kind of a dark tonal shift from a normal Golden Girls episode, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's one that I can understand because
they'd already set her up as a fucking whore.
Well, they'd already set her up as a slut, but Golden Girls, their target audience skewed older. Yeah, lots of younger people enjoyed it. Very good for you. But at the time when it was airing, obviously an older cast, old ladies doing this, their target audience skewed older. And back when it was being made, it was during the AIDS scare. And how do you get these older people where the worst they faced were, yeah, the worst they faced was an episode of The Clap in World War II. How do you teach them about AIDS in a way that they'll understand and in a way that they'll listen and not go, I'm old, I don't have to worry about this?
Makes sense.
So, you know, that's what was very odd about these episodes was not just the tonal switch, but if you go back with a little bit older eyeballs and a little bit more experience and you look and you go, okay, who was the audience for this show at this time? What social issues do we have to teach them about? I wouldn't be surprised if Golden Girls may have even dealt with homosexuality, which a lot of older Americans at the time still thought was a psychological disease.
I do remember the episode because I remember it was actually the old one, Estelle Getty's character.
Right.
What's her
Sophia.
Name? Sophia had a joke that really did make me laugh about it was one of their sons turned out to be gay. And whichever one of the moms was trying to describe him, she's like, he'd bend over backwards to help you. And she goes, he'd have to. And I thought, okay, that was funny. Okay. I thought that was a legitimately funny quip and you're laughing too.
Yeah. I'm picturing Estelle Getty delivering that line.
He'd have to.
Yeah. but you know, and of course it wasn't just the sitcoms and it wasn't just the live action stuff that dealt with this.
Well, we'll get into cartoons. I still want to talk about the live. But like most people don't remember Mark Harmon's character on St. Elsewhere. Yes, a show very much made for adults. He was the first fictional character on American television to ever get AIDS. And, you know, first regular TV character to ever get AIDS.
Really?
And he died of AIDS on St. Elsewhere.
I didn't know that.
And that's how they were dealing with it. They were, you know, we're gonna give this to a main character. And you had the character of Dr. White. Holy shit. Okay, they had a season-long story arc of people getting raped in the parking lot of St. Eligius because St. Eligius was in a shit neighborhood and it was a shit hospital.
Right.
And they were nobody could ever catch the hospital rapist. Well, one of the nurses ended up getting raped. And so she was very traumatized by it. So they were dealing with rape. Okay, fair enough. Well, a main character turned out to be the rapist. He was bipolar.
Ah.
And Dr. White was the fucking rapist and ended up getting shot in the morgue of all places by the nurse that he raped. And you go, holy shit, this got dark all of a sudden. I mean, the show was not really a light show to begin with, but holy crap, you're really playing with the main characters and, you know, likable characters now. And it's like, holy shit.
Well, ER did that a lot, too.
Yeah, but this was in the 80s. This is when it was still edgy and making one of your main characters that's been on the show for 3 seasons and very likable, the fucking rapist of dozens of women, that's kind of edgy.
Yeah.
That's kind of, whoa. Or to give Mark Harmon's character, who they'd already established as a womanizer, to give him AIDS and then kill him a season later of it, kind of ballsy.
Yeah.
hadn't been done before on American television.
But come to think of it, I will give them props though, at least with the hospital rapist episodes. I mean, it's one of the most interesting questions that you don't see asked by artists these days, which is, what if somebody you really liked ended up being a rapist? Or what if one of our friends, let's say somebody that we used to work with or something, or somebody that you and I know, what if they end up, discovering child pornography on the computer or at work or something like that? It's an interesting deal of, hey, I really like this guy. Hey, there are qualities of this person that I really enjoy. And yet here is this horrible, awful
thing that they've done
or thing that they're into or something like that. How do you deal with that? And that is something that you don't when you do see the rapist or the child pornographer or the whatever they do, it's generally painted as, this is a bad guy. This is a bad guy. There's nothing redeeming about them, and you're meant to hate them. You don't see the, hey, this is a really nice guy that you've known for years and years and years, and here we've just discovered this big dark secret about
them. But St. Elsewhere was always a very complex show that was made for to be multi-layered
and
realistic.
That's what I'm saying is, and I'm speaking to the media creators and future media creators that are listening to this right now. It's that kind of a look at things that we don't see anymore.
I agree. And one last thing about St. Elsewhere. The story with David Morse's character being the first time, again on American television, they ever had a male character in a drama raped. He was doing some charity work at a prison, and a riot broke out, and he got gang raped. They basically showed thrusts of the people bending him over and lubing up and stuff, and then they had the emotional stuff of him emotionally healing throughout the next season.
And physically, no doubt, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he was walking with a cane for quite a while and whatnot. And then they even brought it back when his rapist got out on good behavior and started looking him up. And it's like, man, that's a serious way to deal with the fact that, guys do get raped.
Yeah.
That's a very serious way to look at that.
Yes.
The Shield got a bunch of props in, I think it was the sixth season, when Captain Aceveda got raped by two gang members. And the way he dealt with it, rape crisis centers were saying, the way the writers are handling it is the way men usually do handle it. It was a very realistic portrayal of what happens to a strong alpha male character that has his alpha status removed by rape. So you do see that. But then again, both St. Elsewhere and The Shield, very much shows made for adults to begin with.
Well, Law and Order has done this too. And actually, I'll give Law and Order props on one episode where it was a student that had accused her professor in college of raping her.
Regular Law and Order or SVU?
Regular Law and Order.
Okay.
This is prior to SVU even being out.
Okay.
But and they dealt with the whole case just like Law and Order does, because it's a procedural, of dealing with, did he or didn't he, and they get evidence on both sides, and he ends up being a likable guy. And the way the episode ended honked a lot of people off, because you hear, Mr. Foreman, have you reached a verdict? And the foreman of the jury stands up and he goes, we find the defendant
credit.
Cut to credit.
Yeah. they actually, Law and Order did that a few times when they really walked the line. And you had that also, Boston Legal. No, actually, it was a practice episode. It was in the final season when James Spader was on the practice still.
Mm-hmm.
That pissed me off like you would not believe.
Okay, how so?
That dealt with those kind of issues. A police officer had, they were searching for a child rapist that had took his ankle bracelet off, and they thought he was going to go after some more kids. So they went to the rapist's brother, and they kept, where's your brother? Where's your brother? And the cops ended up breaking the guy's arm, and it turned out that the brother didn't know anything about it. The law firm on the practice had to defend the cop, and they won the case.
Oh.
And that just, as the viewer and as a somewhat liberal, that just tore your heart out that these, like you brought up, I love these characters. and they are fighting for the wrong side, and yet you still kind of want them to win because of them. That's a great way to deal with an issue like that.
Sure.
You know, don't make the cop the bad guy. Make him the good guy in the eyes of what the, you know, the audience wants to believe he's innocent. Now, let's go to cartoons.
Okay.
Or not necessarily cartoons, even live action
kids
right. stuff. Look, shortly before we recorded this, you and I watched, and I only vaguely remembered it, and you didn't remember it at all.
Because I didn't watch Captain Planet, aside from a very few episodes of going, oh, is this still stupid? Yes. Yes, it is.
The Captain Planet episode where they go back in time and encounter Hitler trying to buy an atom bomb from the future villains. And then at one point, they eventually call in Captain Planet. And Captain Planet's face-to-face with Hitler. Scott and I both laughed at this, and I bet this was not meant as humor. Captain Planet starts sweating, and he starts getting weak.
He has the same reaction that Superman does to Kryptonite.
Right. And he says, and I'm not going to get it exact, but I'm almost quoting. He says, the hate radiating out of this man is so strong.
I wasn't prepared for the amount of hate radiating out of this one man, was the line.
And you and I looked at each other like, that is so awful. And we shouldn't be laughing.
No, we really
because
shouldn't.
Because you know the producers really meant that as something serious to teach kids, but God damn it, Scott, that was hilarious, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Even if you don't like Captain Planet, even if you're in my boat where you looked at it and went, oh, this is so preachy. I don't like shows with, I call it the message hammer.
Oh, yeah.
Message! Thump! You know, and Captain Planet, the whole damn thing was message! Thump! And I can't stand shows like that. That's why I didn't watch Captain Planet. This was just hilarious.
Well, how do you feel? Do you feel it is going too dark and too adult to even bring Nazi imagery or the idea of Nazism into an otherwise kids show?
No. Now the reason I say no is because, again, if you go to Germany and you go on a historical tour, Eddie Izzard has a great bit where they're on a bus and the tour leader is talking about all of this stuff, and I think Family Guy did a bit similar to this too, but the tour guide is talking about all this stuff about history and there just seems to be this great black hole of nothingness between 1939 and 1945.
Well, Germany is trying to forget the whole Nazi thing.
And so, but the truth is, and this is and I'm not going to say Germany is trying to forget. I'm not going to go there because some of the concentration camps like Auschwitz are now historical museums, and there are now German Jews who are going, no, this did happen, we should remember. And that's kind of where I am, is this did happen. This is a dark, dark chapter in human history.
Probably the darkest in recorded history.
In recorded history, I'll give you that. But this is a dark, dark chapter, and it did happen. And I think as adults, we're going to have to deal with that, and we're going to have to see signs of it happening again if it ever does, because it might, but
don't you think it's inappropriate when Donald Duck is going Heil Hitler, Heil no, Hitler, no, Heil Hitler.
Hang on, a lot of people take those out of context, okay, like the Disney propaganda cartoons and stuff like that. Those cartoons were not made for kids to watch. They weren't. They were made for soldiers.
I know, and I'm
speaking more to the audience now because you and I have had this discussion.
Yes.
But those cartoons were made for new soldiers to watch. And you got to remember, these are, at the time, 16, 17, 18-year-old kids preparing to go to war. And so you have Donald Duck, you know, doing Heil Hitler, Heil Hitler, and talking about how awful it is to be a German. And then, what was the other Disney one? An Education for Death or something like that? Something similar where you see the couple has had the baby and they have to register the name and give him one of the accepted names of Hans. And then he goes to the the state-run school, and he is educated in a very militaristic way.
He gets the barcode.
Yeah, you know, from birth to death, and it's talking about, look at how horrible these Germans are. Look at what they do to their children. Do you want that done to your children? It's not they were made for adults and they were propaganda. So take them as they are. Don't go, oh my God, how awful for kids characters to do this. No.
We'll get back to cartoons. Yeah. You reminded me of something else. Have you ever seen the 1987 movie, The Monster Squad?
Is that the one with Howie Mandel?
No. That's Little Monsters. Oh, okay. Monster Squad was Dracula, Wolfman.
Wolfman has Nards. Yes. Okay.
Okay. And it's a relatively light. I mean, yes, they kill people and it's taken seriously, but it's a relatively light monster movie. It's a fun movie.
Right.
And there's one line of dialogue that is so serious and dark, you just kind of go, okay, tonally, this one line of dialogue does not fit.
Right.
When they're trying to get the German guy to read the thing. To read the incantation, and they go, do you know anything about monsters? And the camera pans to his concentration camp tattoo, and he goes, I know a thing or two about the monsters. And you just kind of go, holy shit, that just kind of killed the fun vibe, didn't it?
Yeah.
That line, it's a great line.
Yes.
But it's inappropriate for the movie, don't you think? For that PG-13 fun kicking Wolfman in the Nards movie?
It's out of place, brilliantly delivered, but yeah, slightly out of place. I'll give you that, but you know, but at the same time, I don't know how it fits, but it somehow fits in there.
I just always thought, even as a kid, that line, it just kind of took me out of the fun aspect that the movie had had going for it up to that point.
Right. And don't get me wrong, that can be a wonderful way for the sneaky message hammer, like Happy Feet. Up until the last bit of the movie, that's a sneaky message hammer because out of nowhere it goes, environmental consciousness, thud.
Not like Fern Gully, which is thud, 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 yeah, thud, thud.
Not like Fern Gully where you sit down and it just goes, the planet is dying and it's your fault. You know, That can be a very, very effective way to use that sneaky message hammer of, here's a great fun tone, blah, 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 darkness.
Hey, Nazi reference.
Yeah, and you're like, wow, okay. And I got to be honest, as a kid, you know, if I were that movie's target audience, I wouldn't, you know, nowadays, I wouldn't know what a concentration camp tattoo looked like. Would I get that? Would it make me want to do some more research? Possibly.
Well, I mean, you remember we've talked about this off mic, but you remember that rant Harlan Ellison went on, this was in like 96, 97. He was giving a speech at some college, and he said he doesn't even remember how he got on to this topic. But he mentioned Auschwitz and Buchenwald. I think that's how the Buchenwald, so one of the other big concentration camps. And he said, a girl, you know, pretty girl just stood up and Auschwitz. I don't recognize that name. What did he write? And he said his heart just sank in his chest that this is the future of America. They think Auschwitz is a fucking author.
That's getting back to our point. That's why I think that stuff that's meant for kids and that has this light tone, that's why I give it permission to deal with this dark stuff.
Okay, how about the banned Spider-Man episode from 1983?
Tell me about it.
It was called The Quest of the Red Skull. It was Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And it aired once on NBC, once again in a rerun on NBC, and was completely deleted from the UPN run, the syndication run, the ABC Family run, and the Disney run. So this, outside of the Region 2 DVD set, the only way you're seeing Quest of the Red Skull is on a bootleg VHS tape from 1983.
Or online somewhere, I'm sure.
Well, because the whole series has been released in Europe, because of course we can't get the cool show. But it was banned because of the nonstop use of swastikas. There's at least four different instances of Heil Hitler. There are swastikas everywhere, and the Red Skull is searching in Africa for a lost cache of Nazi super weapons that Hitler hid right before the end of World War II. And to find it, there's this, they have to make this swastika rock, which the sun puts a big swastika under the side of a mountain, which Firestar then burns into the side of the mountain. There's this giant swastika, and the cave is at the center of the intersection. And then he actually has this line: I will finally bring about the Fourth Reich and finally realize Hitler's mad dream of racial purity. And you're going, this is Spider-Man. That's some dark shit for Spider-Man, isn't it?
Kind of, but then, you know, you look back to the origin of Captain America and the infamous, you know, the comic book cover of Captain America punching Hitler in the face.
But I'm just saying, for a 1983 Spider-Man show, to have all these swastikas and a character that wants to, I mean, they don't say it outright, but bring about the genocide of all the non-whites. That's kind of dark for a Spider-Man fun adventure.
Agreed. Agreed.
You know, so that...
But I don't know, but I, you know, I don't know if it was necessarily wrong, and I certainly don't think that the episode should have been deleted.
You know, there's no way that Disney was ever.
Oh yeah,
Disney was never going to air that episode.
I know,
and it just, I just found that one kind of tonally inappropriate again. And yet, you know, it was still a goofy comic book style adventure.
But with
swastikas everywhere.
But here's the question I have: is tonally inappropriate necessarily completely inappropriate, is tonally inappropriate? Should it be wiped from a show's history?
No, never should. Perfect example. You remember the Looney Tunes cartoon where Yosemite Sam still thinks the Civil War is going on and he's guarding the Mason-Dixon line? Remember that, Looney Tunes? And then Bugs is trying to get across and, you know, it's his wacky adventure.
Okay.
I think I saw that episode 100 times as a kid. And until I got a VHS tape of uncut episodes, there's a scene that hasn't aired on television since the 60s.
Okay.
There's a scene where, because Sam still thinks it's the Civil War,
mm-hmm.
he starts whipping Bugs. And Bugs does one of those, you know, run off camera and come back in a costume thing.
Right.
Of a black mammy in blackface with huge black lips and starts crawling on the floor going, please, massa, don't beat this tired old body. Please, massa. And you're just going, holy shit.
See, once again, proof that, and I hate to say it, but in their original iteration of the 50s, you know, the 40s and the 50s, I don't think Bugs Bunny was meant for kids.
No, it never was. But my point is that that scene had been cut since the 1960s.
Right.
That scene was in no prints that were aired on television. And
right.
the Bugs Bunny shit was aired all the time.
Right.
I didn't even know that scene existed until I saw the uncut VHS tape. Same thing with a lot of those, the World War II era Looney Tunes ones.
Mm-hmm.
They just cut the hell out of all the Japanese racist stuff in that.
Well, I mean, even within our own lifetime, I'm sure you remember what we would call the typical Looney Tunes Japanese character. The buck teeth, the slanty eyes, the round glasses, the great smile,
the broken
at everything,
English.
The broken English.
Miss Bogbane.
Yeah, you don't see those characters, and you haven't seen those characters since the 80s.
One thing I will give Warner Brothers absolute credit for: the DVDs of the Looney Tunes sets. They include all the racist episodes, and yes, they did put a disclaimer on. Whoopi Goldberg is like, yes, these are racist, blah, 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 but taken in the time period, we thought it was appropriate to not censor these whatsoever.
And you
get so much credit for that, Warner Brothers.
Yes.
For putting out these otherwise lost episodes. You had to find bootlegs of these things because you're never going to see. Remember the episode where he goes to Africa?
Oh, yeah.
And the big-lipped, and I mean,
it
was so blatantly racist.
And that's, I think when we talk about this stuff, we can talk about, man, I got to change something on the mics. They're picking up every time that you open up that pop.
Every time I open my soda?
Yeah. But nonetheless, that's...
Did you just call it pop?
Oh, my God, I did.
I'm like, whoa, back up. You just said every time
I
open that pop.
Oh, my God,
seriously?
I am so sorry.
It's a soda.
I am so sorry.
I just got to call you out on that one. Sorry, man.
Okay, that's fine. I don't know. Anyway,
brain farted.
Anyway, the deal is you have to take that kind of stuff in context, just like the very special episodes of whatever, you know, just like Winnie the Pooh being talking about molestation. You have to take it in context of the time. And that's why, yes, today they become jokes. Yes, they're funny on the internet. And yes, to today's audience, they wouldn't be very effective. But considering what they were back then, meh.
Okay, how about a show like Fat Albert? Do you remember the Fat Albert drug dealer episode?
No.
Okay, you know, Fat Albert always dealt with issues. They were little things like, you know, not being prejudiced against people with speech impediments. And,
right.
You know, they never really dealt with racism or anything deep.
Right.
But there was the Fat Albert episode where there was a guy named Mr. Big in Fat Albert's neighborhood. You know, always had the money, had the flash car, and, you know, walked around in the pimp suit and everything. And he asked Albert to deliver a package for him. Well, the package was being delivered to an undercover police officer, and it was a package full of cocaine.
Nice.
And so Albert was arrested, and the police used Albert to get to Mr. Big. And you go, inappropriate tonal shift. Fat Albert doesn't normally deal with busting drug dealers.
No.
This is weird.
No, but again, let's look at the target audience. Fat Albert was aimed specifically at urban kids. And by urban, I mean urban. I don't mean black.
Yeah, you mean city kids.
I mean city kids. And especially in New York and Chicago, LA,
yeah.
Some of the bigger cities out there, a drug dealer on your corner is something that you have to deal with. If you're in, well, let's face it, Fat Albert and the gang, they were from a poor black neighborhood.
Oh, yeah. The only white characters were supporting characters.
Right.
You had no white main characters on that
right.
show.
Right. And they straight up talked about living in the projects and stuff like that. This was a show set in a poor black neighborhood. And in the 80s and today and probably for the rest of time, what you have to deal with in those poor neighborhoods, black or white, is somebody dealing drugs. I mean, and it's a sad but truth. Even here in Wisconsin, in my old neighborhood in De Pere, when I used to live down there, we basically lived in the De Pere ghetto. And I had little kids, 7, 8 years old that, you know me, kids love me. I have no idea why. But we were hanging out with them, and I remember one of them going, yeah, my mommy has her special friends over. And I'm not allowed in my apartment right now because mommy happened to be a drug dealing prostitute.
Yeah, my point with the Fat Albert thing is, how does that even come up in the pitch meeting? All right, we've dealt with dealing with people with speech impediments and cheating on tests. How about we deal with drug dealers?
How about if we do something real and possibly useful?
But I'm just wondering, because Bill Cosby was a very strong force on that show, on the writing
right.
staff. That how he just decided, let's tackle a real issue just one time, then we'll go back to the light shit again.
I could see Bill Cosby doing that.
I just thought that episode always stuck out to me as really, really strange.
I mean, the ones that stick out to me as really, really strange is I would love to see the pitch meeting at Disney. Okay, let's have Winnie the Pooh deal with molestation. Let's have Winnie the Pooh deal with stranger danger and blah.
Well, okay, and I'm sure you remember this. Do you remember Cartoon All-Stars?
Yes, yes,
I
do.
The anti-drug special? Yes. And this is the one that I do give them credit. Nobody tried to say, oh, you're not playing with our characters. ABC, CBS, Fox didn't exist yet, NBC, and all these different characters from these different companies, Universal, Paramount, 20th
Warner
Century
Brothers,
Fox, Warner Brothers, yeah. All got together for a single half-hour TV special that all three networks aired simultaneously. So it didn't matter what network you were watching, you saw it. That was about stopping drugs.
Right.
And it's a little weird to have Michelangelo, normally, cowabunga, dude, let's get some pizza, going, marijuana's bad for you. You kind of, yeah, something's wrong here.
But you got to give them credit for the efforts. I mean, they were, how do we, you know, and again, this has been a great question that parents have asked for a very long time. How do we talk to kids?
Except even then we laughed at that one.
Yes.
That one,
because that one was done very badly.
Because I'm sorry, if you need to get across drugs are bad, having the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Kermit and the Care Bears and Bugs Bunny telling you it, it's not really effective. That's going to blow up in your face.
I hate to say it, and this is one thing that I've noticed. One thing that they used to do all the time in the 80s and stuff like that is a lot of shows would talk down to kids. They were really patronizing. And when you end up doing a special like this and you have to dilute things, you end up with characters completely out of character. And I think that's why that one failed. It's because you had all of these characters that were way out of character.
Yeah, to have Bugs Bunny stop chewing on a carrot and go, all right, we need to talk about drugs.
Exactly. It doesn't work. And kids pick up on this. You know, kids would look at that and go, no, Bugs Bunny wouldn't do that. No, Michelangelo wouldn't talk like that. What the hell is up with baby Kermit and why is he here? And that's part of the problem of those very special episodes. That's kind of why we look back and why we see that in many cases, yes, they were successful. In many more cases, they failed.
Well, I'm thinking of one of the worst, most preachy, most blatantly transparent one of those I've seen was an episode of 21 Jump Street. Ironically enough, it's the episode Brad Pitt guest starred on before he was famous.
Okay.
So it's a very sought-after episode on the internet because you got big-haired 1987 Brad Pitt.
Sure.
I can't remember the title off the top of my head. It's like a really early season 2 episode. It deals with teen suicide. Hanson and Penhall bust some kid, and then, you know, while he's in jail, he commits suicide rather than face the charges. So it brings up this whole teen suicide thing and blah, blah, blah. And then, so Hanson, Johnny Depp's character, is getting talked to by a psychologist about, you know, how to broach it to these kids. And at one point he goes, but if they do want to seek help, doctor, where can they go? And the guy goes, good question, Officer Hanson. And just going, oh, fuck you. You're not even trying to work this into the episode, are you? This is a fucking 44-minute anti-suicide special. You're not even pretending it's a goddamn 21 Jump Street episode, are you? That's one of the most blatantly transparent and offensively bad ones I can remember.
Yeah, and again, that's because it was patronizing. And you see it in kids' shows all the time, and it's a shame. I think one of the few animated things of the 90s out there that didn't patronize kids was Animaniacs.
No, Animaniacs was full of jokes that
of jokes that kids either got or they didn't, and they moved on. You didn't, you know, when you had Dot going fingerprints, I don't think so. You didn't have to have her stop and go, okay, kids, what I meant by fingerprints was this is the artist, musical artist, Prince, and I was going to anally violate him with one of my digits. You know,
actually, the best one of those is not even a dirty one, but it's an Animaniacs joke that there was no kid in the world that was going to get. Kid in the world was going to get the joke. Pinky and the Brain were trying to infiltrate Santa's headquarters so they could, you know, bump off Santa. And they're working their way up, you know, as elves and whatnot. And Pinky comes in and goes, hey, Brain, we're invited over to the reindeer. We're invited over to Donner's house for a party. And he goes, funny, I don't relish being part of the Donner party.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what kid? You name me a child who got that joke.
No, that was specifically aimed at, you know, college and above I think that's why these very special episodes of blah have become a joke. I mean, again, you also look at video specials. Like, I forget the one with the Fonz where they came up with the honk.
You got me on this one.
I
don't remember this.
It's a direct-to-video thing with Henry Winkler as part of it.
Henry Winkler as the Fonz, or no, Henry
Winkler as Henry Winkler, who was really Fonzing it up at the time. But basically they went, okay, too many adults are, you know, kids might be playing and you yell help when you're playing because you're playing cops and robbers and it ends up being a false alarm, and too many false alarms means you yell for help and no adult comes. So they They came up with this thing called the honk, which when you're in real trouble, you were seriously supposed to go honk or something like that. This absolutely weird, weird noise that they were making. And
I don't remember this. I'm going to have to go YouTube this,
oh,
man.
Oh, hang on just a moment. All right.
All right. So Scott found the clip. He was wrong. It actually is him as the Fonz.
So you want me to play this thing?
Yes, I play it. We're running out of time, but play it.
Now, here's a very funny name for a very serious self-defense tool. It's called the honk. That was Tanya. She's from the Children's Self-Help Project up in San Francisco. Now, the honk is not a sound you make when you're playing, and it's not a game. It's different. You use it when you're in danger.
It makes a different kind of sound than the kind of sound that kids usually make. Quiet, you throat. Grown-ups don't even pay any attention to that, because we know that's how kids sound when they're playing. The self-defense yell, though.
I like that.
That's a sound that comes from taking a lot of air in all the way down into your diaphragm. And then you let it out real slowly. Listen again. It sounds like this.
All right. If we're going to do that, then you're gonna get in our last couple of minutes here, you're going to play for them the Pee Wee Herman anti-crack PSA, that minute-long anti-crack PSA from Pee Wee Herman.
God.
Do you remember that one?
Barely. I barely remember that one, and I put it out of my brain for a reason.
No. You're going to get that, and you're going to play it.
Okay. Hang on.
All right. Okay, so. This is Pee Wee Herman. And by the way, he is dressed. This is not Paul Rubens. He is dressed as Pee Wee Herman using the Pee Wee Herman voice. So this is Pee Wee Herman telling you about crack.
Oh, God. Pee Wee Herman, he should know. Oh, wait a minute. It would help if I, didn't mute the YouTube because I'm stupid.
Yeah, picky.
Give me a break. This is why we call it amateur radio, folks. It's because I'm not a professional.
This is crack, rock cocaine. It isn't glamorous or cool or kid stuff. It's the most addictive kind of cocaine, and it can kill you. What's really bad is nobody knows how much it takes. So every time you use it, you risk dying. It isn't worth it. Look, everybody wants to be cool, but doing it with crack isn't just wrong. It could be dead wrong.
All right, Scott, now, you want to talk about, we mentioned how having Bugs Bunny tell you drugs are bad. How about Pee Wee Herman? As Pee Wee Herman telling you, this is crack.
Helps
if you're talking to the right side of your microphone, too.
I know.
Are you just totally amateuring this up tonight?
I am. That's just the way it is. Plus, I'm, like I said, my sound settings are being stupid, and I discovered why, and I kind of fixed it, and now that I've fixed it, I have to get back into the
groove. Well, then why don't we quick pimp Amazon after we say, this has been a very special episode of Lost in the Static.
This has been a very special episode of Lost in the Static. So
we hope you learned
something. We hope you learned something. Yeah. Now, why do I feel like I should have Mr. Belvedere coming out and, how he always wrote those diary entries?
Yeah.
Or Doogie Howser always wrote it on his computer? We should have one of those. I learned today that I shouldn't patronize kids and that talking down to them was blah, 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 blah. I'm an idiot and that's why my stupid show was canceled. But nonetheless.
You also have to learn to go to Amazon, or go to 1201beyond.com. Use the Amazon links if you're going to shop at Amazon anyway. And you help us out a little bit. Clear your cookies.
Kill the ad blocker.
And if you're going to shop at Amazon anyway, it helps us out. We don't get a bonus or anything, but you do get to help out the show. Oh, yep. And Scott also told me we got a lot of hate mail towards me from our 1990s
episodes. Yes, we did. You're a dick.
You were doubting this in the first place?
Not at all. But nonetheless, and again, when it comes to Amazon, I can't see who bought what, but I can see what was bought. And yes, your purchases go through, and I see them just about right away. So, well, it might take a week or two for it to filter in, but thank you. Thank you all very much.
Some of you are buying some big shit, too.
And whoever bought that white cat suit, though, if we ever meet them, they have to model it.
If they're female.
No, I don't care who it is. I want to see it.
I'm done.
At least this isn't like the one, like, you know, when I mentioned Mass Effect 3. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next week.